genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brains.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is belief systems. Each of my guests will discuss his or her worldview, whether it's politics, religion, or death. My first guest is an enigma wrapped inside of a riddle. He's a successful serial entrepreneur who views communism as a superior social, political, and economic system to capitalism. We'll examine his belief in the context of what's happening in the Occupy Wall Street movement. My second guest is a Renaissance man. He's an attorney, a politician, certainly a novelist, a nonfiction author, and a provocateur. He's attacked such topics as the Kennedy assassination, placing President George W. Bush on trial for murder, and he criticized publicly the O.J. Simpson ruling. We'll discuss his findings as he turns his attention to defending agnosticism in his latest book, The Divinity of Doubt. My third guest is a member of the Association for Death Education and Counseling. She uncovers which funeral trends are the latest rage in her book, A Good Goodbye, Funeral Planning for Those Who Don't Want to Die. And if you want to join in the conversation or ask a question, you can always call us at 639-0008. My first guest, Ron Zayas, is the CEO of eGuardian, which is an online child protection company providing age verification and parental permissions. Ron was the founder and CEO of the country's fastest-growing marketing implementation company, 360 Business Consulting, before he joined eGuardian as the co-founder and chief marketing officer. Ron became the CEO of eGuardian in 2008. After 10 years as a senior vice president and chief marketing officer for the world's largest franchisor of printing and small business services, Ron brings expertise in marketing, advertising, and e-commerce strategies to everything that he does. In addition to his expertise in the corporate environment, Ron also founded one of the nation's first digital graphics companies, Expressions Unlimited. Joining us from Southern California, hi, Ron. How are you today?
I'm doing very well, Phil. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, well, thanks for being our guest. Love to bat around ideas with thought leaders such as yourself. But right away, we've got to reconcile this seeming discrepancy between you being a successful, multiple serial entrepreneur and also favoring communism. So I guess my first question has got to be, how did you develop your worldview on communism?
Well, I've been a Marxist rather more specifically than a communist, ever since I was a little kid, which growing up in Southern Orange County is not the easiest thing in the world. But to me, it just seemed like a very ethical and economic and political, logical inference of what was going on in the world. I mean, it makes sense to me that if you look at the most important institutions that we have, our families, our close-knit communities, they're all run more in a communist manner than they are in a capitalist sense. In other words, in my family, we don't look around and say to my son, I'm sorry, you don't produce as much for us as, you know, my wife does, so therefore you don't get to eat, or you don't get health care, or you don't get any of our attention. We say we are all in this together, and everybody who can will provide, and those who need will get. And that just made a lot of sense to me, and it made a lot of sense growing up.
All right, and on a small scale, on the family unit, that certainly makes sense. I mean, clearly you love all of your children equally, although you do favor certain children's behavior over other behaviors that they have. So you have your system of punishments and rewards within the Marxist environment that you're talking about. I guess when you start to expand the circle, though, Ron, that's where it gets a little bit muddier, and really, in my mind, gets muddy when you consider that you've started not one, but two, but three businesses separately within the capitalistic system, and yet you view Marxism as the preferred state. So talk to me about expanding the circles, first of all. You know, once you get past the family and you start thinking about putting your children in school, don't you want your children to get straight A's, and don't you prefer that they be at the top of the class rather than the bottom of the class?
Absolutely. And two things on this. Number one, it's important to say that as a Marxist, I believe that implementation of any philosophy, whether it's religious or political or economical, starts first with the individual. Once you start asserting control over people, any system, whether it's capitalism or communism, will fall apart. And in fact, in implementation, there is no pure capitalist society. I mean, as close as to pure capitalism that the U.S. got to probably died in the late 20s, 1920s here. There's no pure communist society, obviously, and probably one of the best blends, in my opinion, is the European model, which is definitely a blend of the two. But getting back to that expanding circle of what we do with our children, we obviously incentivize our children to do the things that we want them to do. We say, look, if you go to college and you do well in your grades, we're gonna give you monthly stipends here, which we've done with all of our children, to make sure that, you know, you don't have to work, you don't have to do anything else, you can focus on school. If your grades start to dip, that stipend goes away. I don't see anything that's in, you know, that violates the concept of communism there. It's within their power to do well, and we incentivize them. What we don't do is we don't say, because you didn't do very well in high school, son, you can't go to college, but our daughter can. Or we don't say, because my daughter wants to be a business major and therefore will practically, you know, might earn more, and we're going to pay for her business school, but we're not going to pay for my son to go to psychology, for example, and if he plans to work as a nonprofit. We value all the resources that they bring in, and we give them the resources that they need, not just what they'll be able to pay us back at some point.
All right, that makes some sense. My guest is Ron Zayas, and we are debating the virtues of communism versus capitalism in the context of Occupy Wall Street. So let's bring it into that context if we can, Ron. The Occupy Wall Street protesters are out there. They're railing against Wall Street. They're railing against fat cat bankers. They're railing against excessive corporate profits. They're railing against the 1% richest in the United States and more. I mean, their goals are muddled and diverse, to say the least. But one thing is clear, that they're expressing anger against certain segments of the capitalistic system that they feel betrayed them. So in what ways do you sympathize with this Occupy Wall Street movement and the protesters that are out there on the street today?
Well, obviously, I have a lot of sympathy for them, not only because I believe in what they're arguing against, as it were, but also because I'm on the 99%, I'm not on the 1%. As much as people in my bracket tend to believe that they're wealthy, they're not. There's a very small, as you know, percentage of wealthy people in this world. People who are so wealthy or are wealthy are people whose money works for them rather than them having to do any value. If I stopped working tomorrow, I could live for a while, but eventually things would get ugly. So I sympathize with being part of the 99%, not being part of the 1%.
All right.
That being said, the people on the Occupy Wall Street, as much as I encourage them, and we've gone out and we've looked at, been and participated in the ones in L.A., the important thing here is to understand that they don't have a philosophy. There isn't an overriding philosophical or political idea that's holding this together. Much like the Tea Party anger of a couple of years ago, these are people that are just angry. In most cases, I think they're angry because they've lost their job, because they feel that the government has used hundreds of billions of dollars to help people that really shouldn't have gotten the help, in my opinion. But I don't think it's a philosophical or political argument that's being made. It's just rage.
All right.
And that's different.
The rage is clearly different, and I would agree with you that there's a lot of rage built up there. As far as their political goals, I'd have to agree with you there. One of the things that has always baffled me, Ron, is that the people that are out there in the Occupy Wall Street, those of them that are employed or were employed that have a 401k, It has always baffled me that they'd be out there railing against Wall Street, railing against investments, when the Wall and how Wall Street performs. That is yet another enigma that is out there. But back to the analogy that you drew between the Tea Party and the Occupy Wall Street movement. Yes, both movements clearly expressed rage, but expressed them in completely different ways, whereas the Occupy Wall Street movement to date has just slightly over 1,500 arrests on a national scale. The Tea Party movement never had any arrests in protests that they had. Furthermore, you know, the Occupy Wall Street people are wailing against Wall Street, yet they are making available themselves to McDonald's and places where they can go take spit baths and keep clean and keep warm and that kind of thing. It just seems to me that there, again, the lack of cohesion in the organization doesn't bring about a cohesive or even a very good picture about what's happening in Occupy Wall Street. Your thoughts on that?
Well, the area of focus is completely different. I mean, whatever motivations you think the Tea Party have, and I definitely feel that you know, I have an opinion on that, but regardless, I think they focus in on one thing, their dislike for President Obama. I think that all the other things that came out with, you know, not wanting to have in debt, these things didn't manifest themselves until a new occupant of the White House came in. So they had a very focused agenda and a very focused area to go on. If you go to the people on Occupy Wall Street, and again, having conversations with the people here in L.A., if you told them tomorrow, whatever you want will be accomplished, just tell us what you want, I don't think they can articulate it. It's just a raw rage of understanding that there was a transfer of wealth from the government, from the people, through the government, to the banks on Wall Street. And that there's anger with that none of that was used. And now when you turn around and you say, well, we need to extend unemployment benefits further, or we need to do something for people who are losing their homes, or we need to do something for teachers who are losing their jobs, that the government and the people around this, including the Tea Party congressmen who are now elected, are saying there's simply no money and we have to deal with this debt first. There's a raw anger that are saying that our priorities are messed up.
All right. A very good point that you're making. My guest is Ron Zayas. We're debating the merits of capitalism versus communism, and we're looking at the Occupy Wall Street movement. Ron, one of the things, though, about the Occupy Wall Street movement that has me scratching my head is that the Occupy Wall Street movement is against big government. They're against the rage of transferring the money to the banks, as we did, to prop up the financial system. But a lot of people are out there saying, wait a minute, big government shouldn't have transferred the money to the banks. They should have transferred the money to me. And it's almost building up a case of the money would have been better spent if it had gone into my pockets. The government should be helping me, and sort of building up a case that they are dependent on the government, dependent on the support that the government would give, is almost making themselves helpless without the help of the federal government. Isn't that the way, though, that the former East Bloc countries used to think, Poland, Czechoslovakia, that they would rely on the government for their support, rely on the government for their everyday needs, and that thus making them really dependent and taking away their motivation to succeed?
Well, and Bill, yes, but I would counter a different way. One, we are all dependent on the government. And again, I don't think these Occupy Wall Street people have a philosophical reign, no more than the Tea Party did, of saying this is our overall belief. I mean, Tea Partiers on the other side say we don't want a big government, we don't want government involved, but we sure as hell want to stop abortion, and we sure as hell want to stop gay marriage, which, you know, necessitates a strong government to get involved and do that. Here's the point, though. The point is that we're all dependent upon government. And even in a capitalist society, bankers showed that they were dependent upon the government. And generally speaking, the government is the only one that can get you out of recession. What normally happens in most cycles is that during a recession, when business retracts, the government's the only one that can come in with enough money and say, we're going to start spending, we're going to build roads, we're going to do infrastructure, we're going to do things that are going to prime the pump back up, to use one of Reagan's analogy, and be able to get the government going and to get the economy going again. And then as more people get employed, as more money is spent, businesses feel confident and they jump in and they take over. Generally what happened was that when things got good, then the government made its money back in taxes and was able to get a surplus again and be able to spend that money when things were bad. It's what got us out of the Depression. It's what's gotten us out of recessions that have happened in the past. But because when things got good, corporations, individuals, and people in general didn't want to pay taxes, the government kept borrowing money. So now in a recession, they're in a very bad position to be able to spend money again. The question here isn't whether government needs to be strong and be involved. There isn't a logical person out there that I think feels that a government shouldn't be strong. If you look at governments around the world that have low regulation, low taxes, and aren't involved, they're not places that most of us would want to live in.
Well, okay, I see that point, and that point hinges on the fact that you have a very Keynesian view of economics. The government spending is the only thing that's going to pull us out of the recession that they're in. There's another side. There's the whole supply-side economics school that says, hey, wait a minute, government doesn't have to spend a cent. Lower the tax rates, and then make the money more available to people to spend it as they see fit, and that will pull us out of any recession that we have, and that is probably better overall for the economy than having the government even build roads, build bridges, these short-term projects that eventually do end and people go back into unemployment. So it's a difference between the supply-siders versus the Keynesians. And I can make the argument that the supply side is better. I can spend my money more efficiently, better, and help the economy than the government can spend the money for me. Your thoughts on that?
First of all, I would love to have a whole conversation just on what evidence there is that supply side works. But giving, for example, that it were, let me just put it to you this way. There are certain things that are much more efficiently done as a whole than they are individually. It's more expensive for you to take your children and get a teacher and teach them or homeschool them this, and all of us to get together and be able to do it as a group. Healthcare is another example. It is vastly more efficient for us to get together as a whole group, insure everybody, and provide medical care for everybody than it is for people to do individually. When you're getting the government involved in a very focused way, you can do things like build infrastructure. Building our roads, building our interstate system was not something that any individual corporation or individual could have ever done. The government invested money in it. It isn't just a short-term, let's do something to get people working. It is, let's build something that's going to last for a long time. The Hoover Dam is still providing energy 60 years after it was built, or 70 years almost after it was built. The interstate system is still helping us out. The airport system, things that we build for infrastructure, not only get people working and get the economy going, but they build dividends that the government can rely on for many years. The problem is that in recent years, when we have pumped money in, we've done it in what I think are stupid ways. Giving somebody back a $300 check does nothing for the economy. Helping people refinance their mortgages, people who are in mortgages right now that they're having trouble affording but they haven't defaulted on, helping them refinance when the government's guaranteeing those loans anyway is an intelligent thing to put more money back into the system and help stabilize communities. And I think that would have been a better use of money than bailing out some of the major banks in the way that we did. I have nothing against bailing out the banks, and I do believe that it foresaw the worst things happening. But the underlying problem is people not having assets in their home, people not being able to get access to capital. Let me just say one other quick thing.
Sure.
There is... when you lower taxes as a business owner, my lower taxes don't help me hire new people. I only hire new people when I need them. Taxes come after all of my operating expenses. So at the end of the day, if I have lots of money left over and I don't have to pay taxes, I buy a plane, I buy a boat, I don't hire new employees unless I need them. So I don't think that lowering taxes is the most efficient way to grow our economy.
Well, and we're going to have to leave it there, Ron. And you're right, we'll have to have you back in the future to debate this in much more detail. It's a very spirited discussion. My guest has been Ron Zayas. He is the CEO of eGuardian and is also very much a staunch Marxist. We'll have to have you back in the future. Ron, if people want to learn more about you, learn more about eGuardian or anything else that you do, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
I would direct them to our 360businessconsulting.com. That's really my home company, and that's where most of the information on me is. Or you can Google my name, obviously, and see that I haven't done prison anywhere. No,
good to know, Ron. Thanks so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
And I can't wait to hear Vincent after this, so thank you very much.
Take care and stay tuned.